Guys, welcome back to the Community Council, and thanks again for joining us today. If you're just tuning in, we're the show that talks about everything amazing in the community. We're also here to show love to all of the amazing nonprofits out there trying to make a difference. And on the phone with me, I have Dr. Kerner, who is a surgeon at Kell West Head and Neck Injury Institute. Dr. Kerner, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I feel like the symptoms for COVID change day by day. So far... What are the symptoms for COVID?
Well, we're starting to learn a lot more about this disease. Remember now, this is something that's really only been known fairly significantly to us for about 6 months now. Mm-hmm. So it's evolving as the disease evolves, too. So basically, the symptom complex that everybody ascribed to COVID was fever, shortness of breath, and cough. Now, it's evolved to the point now where it can be either asymptomatic, meaning no symptoms whatsoever,
right,
to a whole array of symptoms, which can be a runny nose, a little bit of stuffiness. We're seeing that now. We're seeing loss of smell and taste is the only symptom. So it really now is a little bit tricky because we're seeing this wide range of symptoms. So when people present with fatigue, cough, shortness of breath, that's sort of the classic pattern, and we're testing all those people. But now we've expanded the testing as it's more available to test people with other symptoms that aren't as common or haven't been seen initially in the initial phases of the disease.
Can we talk about people that are asymptomatic? I was reading a couple of reports, and I feel like there is some confusion out there of people basically saying that it's harder to catch, I guess, COVID from someone who is asymptomatic. Can you debunk that myth for us?
Well, we're not. Okay, so that's evolving, too. So there's been some conflicting studies on that. So when we talk about asymptomatic, what we talk about, and we're seeing a fair number of those people right now, and what that means is, for example, somebody who's scheduled for elective surgery, we're testing all those people to protect the operating room and the operating room staff. And we're now getting people coming back with positive tests. And in fact, I have a patient last week and one this week who we've had to cancel because they're getting routinely screened prior to surgery and they're coming back positive. And they're asymptomatic, meaning when you talk to them and really ask them, drill down, are you having any cough? No. Any shortness of breath? No. Any fevers? No. Any runny nose? No, absolutely nothing. I feel fine.
Mm-hmm.
So those people are harboring the virus in the back of their nose, and that's what this means because that's how we test. And it means that they're carrying the virus with them right now, at this period of time, but they don't feel sick at all. Now, it's been controversial whether those people can spread the disease or not. Theoretically, they still should be able to, right, because the virus will shed in the back of the nose. That's where it's attaching first. However, if they're not coughing, they're not sick where they're coughing or sneezing, they're not going to propel a large volume of virus out into the environment, which can then subsequently infect other people, which I think you've heard the term probably super spreader.
Mm-hmm.
So those would be the people that are like an index person who's got the virus and who is sick, who's spreading it, as like the index case. So what we're starting to see, though, is that there's been some studies that show that symptomatic or asymptomatic carriers of the coronavirus can spread it. And we've seen now a study out of Europe just recently that they are not big spreaders of the disease.
It's really interesting that you say that. I just wanted to touch on that because I feel like a lot of people were confused by that. So,
it's confusing. It's confusing to doctors too because the information's changing so rapidly. But let me just point out something that we've been doing since the beginning of this, and what we're having all of our patients do, and we've been doing this in conjunction with our dental colleagues. And that is, we're having our patients, and we're trying to get the word out, which is why I'm happy to discuss this with you, is we're having all of our patients irrigate their nose and their sinuses with a saltwater solution that has iodine added to it, or betadine.
Almost like a neti pot, or no?
Yes, you can use the neti pot as the delivery system. But what we have found, and we've been studying this pretty carefully, and this work has been confirmed out of a study out of England that since the virus replicates in the back of the nose, you can actually reduce that virus and kill it by using nasal irrigations with betadine, which is the red antiseptic that we use during surgery, you know, to clean a surgical site before surgery. Mm-hmm. It's readily available. It's very cheap. The concentrations have been worked out fairly well, and it's not toxic. I do it myself every day, twice a day. Very easy to mix up. I mix up the solution, and I'm flushing my nose out twice a day in my sinuses. And, you know, just because I'm potentially exposed to it at a higher rate than other people, and even though we wear PPE at work and stuff, we're still, you know, still hesitant about exposure. But we're doing that. We're having all of our patients do that. And certainly we're having anybody that's testing positive, we're making sure that they do that 3 to 4 times a day.
That's really interesting. Something so simple like that can possibly kill the virus.
Absolutely. And the key is even though we don't understand this virus in its entirety yet, we are very familiar with upper respiratory viruses, which really is what it is. And it behaves like other viruses. That is, it must attach to those tissues in the back of our nose and in our throat where it replicates readily before, in the next phase of the disease, where it gets into the lung, which then results in the cough and the shortness of breath. So what we want to do is we want to mitigate the disease before it progresses to that phase. And then there's that second or third phase of this disease, which becomes that inflammatory response where you're hearing about people that are on ventilators and that are very, very sick and many times don't come off the ventilator. So if we can avoid them from getting into that third or that inflammatory phase of the disease, we can actually treat a lot of people successfully. And that's what we're doing. When we're seeing people early on in the process, we're having them do a number of things, high-dose vitamin C, zinc supplementation, vitamin D because supplements, because those are all the homeopathic substances that you can use to prevent the inflammatory response. And then the nasal irrigations with the betadine as well.
And it's something so simple as a neti pot, which I use for allergies. So you were saying neti pot. And what else do you use?
So what you would add, and we have it on our website, and we have it printed all over, and we've got videos on how to do it. But it's called povidone iodine, which is the red antiseptic solution. It's a 10% solution. You take what we do is we mix it up. I don't want to get too complicated with the concentrations, but we take 6 cc's, which is like 1 tablespoon, mix it into the nasal irrigating bottle or a neti pot that has about 240 cc's, and that's the right concentration, and it's very tolerable. You can't get sick from it. If you swallow it, it's okay, and you can basically sterilize the back of your nose and the back of your throat from this virus.
That's amazing. I want to talk about how important it is to wear a mask. I feel like there is a lot of controversy out there of people just not wanting to wear masks and things like that. How important is it?
Well, again, so the problem is the masks all vary in their quality of what they can do to prevent the spread of the disease. So, but what we do know is that the vast majority of spread of the virus is occurring in droplets. Not just the viral particles, but in big droplets, like when we cough or when we sneeze. So if you can stop those droplet particles, then you can prevent a significant amount of spread of the disease. So if you're infected with the virus and you're coughing, you're going to cough out these big droplets that can go, you know, 10, 20, 30 feet potentially, that's been shown to be the case. You know, far further than the 6 feet that we talk about for social distancing. So if you're wearing a mask, you're going to prevent that that transmission of those droplet particles.
Mm.
Now, as a recipient of that, it's the same. It works for you as a person who's in public and potentially being exposed to droplets in the air. The mask will prevent you from getting that. And certainly the higher the quality of the mask, the better it'll work against, you know, these droplet particles. For healthcare workers, we need N95 type masks. which are sort of the highest level mass. For people that are just out and about and, you know, in the public and not in a high load location, a high exposure location, a regular surgical mask would be fine. The cloth masks are less effective, but I still think it provides a small level of protection, which is better than nothing.
100%. So I am someone who suffers from like sinus issues and sinus headaches and things like that. How can you ease the pain or ease someone's mind when they're just have plain old sinus issues and not have COVID?
Well, okay, so that's a good question, and I get that asked all the time. You know, so sometimes it's difficult to tell what is what. But typically patients that have chronic sinus disease have had it for a number of years or in the past. So they know what it is. They know also during the allergy seasons, when they have seasonal allergies, those allergies will flare up and they'll be symptomatic at those times. And the typical allergy symptoms will be a runny nose, post-nasal drip, itchy eyes, and typically no fevers, no shortness of breath, and rarely a cough. So that will be the differentiator. Now, sinus patients, you know, can also get pressure in the face. You know, they can have a fair amount of discomfort. Something else we don't typically see, we haven't seen much with COVID-19 as well. So that would differentiate a sinus infection from a COVID disease.
I sometimes get pressure behind the eyes.
Right. So that, again, is primarily something typically seen with a sinus infection as well.
Are there any surgical options?
Sure. So what we do is when we see patients for this sinus disease, we work them up with a combination of examination where we use a nasal endoscope so we can actually see right to those sinus openings. That gives us quite a lot of information just by looking at the nasal anatomy and the actual sinus outflow tracts. And then we get a CAT scan, which can be done readily in about less than a minute, and it will give us a full analysis of the anatomy. And from that, we can determine whether there's blockage of those sinus outflow tracts, and those can be corrected readily. Now, we have conservative solutions where we can actually balloon dilate the sinuses, which we call a balloon sinuplasty.
Mm-hmm. Very familiar.
Yeah, so it's done under local anesthesia in the office. And for the right patients, it's very, very effective. And if they have nasal polyps or other anatomic problems that are causing sinus blockage, we have surgical techniques now that are fairly minimally invasive, take about 45 minutes to an hour, and with pretty rapid recovery, very minimal pain and discomfort.
You have been such a great help. Is there anything else that you want to add before we go?
I think for everybody out there, I want them to know that testing now is pretty readily available between the county and the city and most healthcare providers. A number of the urgent cares are offering testing. So for people that are concerned that they may have a coronavirus or COVID-19 and really want to find that out, there is readily access now to testing. We're testing a lot of people. We're getting people tested. We're testing people for antibodies as well. And I think, you know, they don't have to worry. They can just go get tested and we can allay their fears.
Do you have a quick second to explain the test to people?
Sure. So there's two basic forms of testing. So one is the swab test. That's the one that's stuck in the back of the nose, which everyone talks about, where they say it feels like it's going in my brain. and what that means is you've got to get to the back of the nose to the area called the nasopharynx. And that's the area straight behind the nose where the top of the throat is. So the area behind the uvula and the soft palate that we see in the mouth. And the reason we want to get back there is because that's the area where that virus replicates and lives at the beginning stages of the disease, as we talked about before. So we have to do a swab of that area and get a sample of that where we want to get a sample, where hopefully if the person has the virus, we're swabbing that, we're getting virus on the swab. That swab then goes into a medium, and then that's evaluated for the RNA or for the genetic code for the virus. And if that's present, and we can identify that in a test, then we deem that you have positive COVID-19, meaning you have active virus at that time. An antibody test is testing your immune system to see if you've developed an immune response vis-a-vis making an antibody to the virus. So those are very specific tests, and those are blood tests. So we'll draw either a finger blood from a finger stick or a small blood draw, and using that blood into a little reagent and then onto a strip, very similar to a pregnancy test, we can determine whether a person has the presence of antibodies or not. And that doesn't necessarily confer immunity, but it tells us that you've been exposed to that virus.
Well, Dr. Kerner, I appreciate you jumping on and chatting with us and just, you know, explaining everything to us, because I feel like it just changes by the day. So thank you so much for that.
You're very welcome.
KISSFM, Los Angeles.
102.7 KISSFM.
An iHeartRadio station.